Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Thursday, October 10th, 2019. Sudan's ruling council appoints a woman to be Chief Justice, and the chairman of the pre-transitional committee says South Sudan should not have a problem with forming a transitional government by November 12th.
Come November 12th, we are ready to form a new government. We don't have issues that can obstruct us, and we are working to form the government on time.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Sudan's ruling council has appointed the country's first woman chief justice. The appointment is seen as another step forward for female representation in the new transitional government. Sudan's sovereign council has officially confirmed the pick of Nimat Abdullah as the country's chief justice, a first in Sudan and the entire Arab world. Females around the world receive the news as a victory for Sudanese women. They believe a legal reconciliation shall follow this huge step. Researcher Nahid Jabrala, co-founder of Salama Center for Children, says the appointment of Judge Nimat Abdullah is very symbolic and praised Sudanese women for bravely taking part in the 30-year fight for representation in government and their rights as citizens. Jabrala says it also shows the commitment of women to push forward on female issues in the country. Abdullah was initially appointed Chief Justice soon after military leaders and the opposition signed a power-sharing deal in late August. She was quickly replaced by a man, only to be reappointed after huge street protests. The demonstrators demanded an unbiased judiciary, which they think Abdullah can provide based on her background. She is considered one of the founders of the Sudanese Judges Club and is not politically affiliated with any one party. The chairman of the National Pre-Transitional Committee, or NPTC, the body tasked with implementing pre-transitional activities of the South Sudan Revitalized Peace Agreement, says the parties that signed the deal should be ready to form a unity government on time, despite the dispute over the number of states and their boundaries. Lasuba Membo reports for VOA from Juba.
Speaking in Arabic to reporters in Juba today, NPTC Chairman Tut Gadluak says the committee, which is comprised of representatives from all parties that signed the agreement, sees no obstacles standing in the way to form a new unity government by November 12th.
Come November 12th, we are ready to form a new government. We don't have issues that can obstruct us, and we are working to form the government on time. If we form the government, nothing else will be left ahead.
But several pre-transitional activities remain unresolved, aside from the number of states and their boundaries, like forming one national army. The SPLM-IO said recently that it would not be part of a unity government unless the two issues are resolved. Gadluak insists security arrangements are being implemented because the parties have moved their forces to cantonment sites. He says the training of unified forces will commence soon. The deal requires the parties to resolve their dispute over the number of states. While the Kiir administration wants 32 states, the SPLM-IO wants 21. If the parties fail to resolve their dispute, the Independent Boundaries Commission should organize a referendum so that the people can decide whether to have 32, 21, or the original 10 states, according to the terms of the deal. Gadluak says the state issue should not be an obstacle to forming a transitional government.
The issue of the states is not a big issue. After all, it is in the agreement. We signed it and we distributed the states. The opposition have 14 and we have 16. We all agreed on this.
Stephen Parkwall, who represents the SPLM-IO at the reconstituted Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, has criticized Gadluak's remarks, saying he was speaking for the government, not the NPTC.
I think Honorable Tutsi speaks for his party. The position of the SPLM, SPLA-IO, is that we must implement the agreement by the letter. And the letter of this agreement says that the transitional government of national will be formed upon the completion of the security arrangement and after the determination of the number of states. That's what the letter of this agreement says. And that is what the SPLM and SPLA-IO stand for.
Cole acknowledges implementation of security arrangements is progressing, but says the parties need to do more than just cantonment of the forces. Cole says the remaining time is enough to iron out their differences.
All we need is a political will to negotiate in good faith, and we can hammer them out. On security arrangement, yes, we are making progress, but that does not give us a freeway to just form the government on November the 12th before making sure that we have unified protection forces and the rest of the process is in place.
President Salva Kiir and Riek Machar are expected to meet face-to-face again at the end of this month to resolve some key issues. They met in Juba last month, but no agreements were announced afterward. For VOA News, I am Lasuba Memo in Juba.
Civil society activists in Juba are calling on all signatories to the revitalized peace deal to hold face-to-face meetings before next month's deadline to form that unity government. The head of a local civil society group says the party should sit down and discuss the fate of unresolved key provisions now before it's too late. Viola Elias reports from Juba.
Jame David Kolok, Executive Director for Foundation for Democracy and Accountable Governance, or FODAC, says with only few weeks to go before the extended pre-transitional period expires, the parties have done precious little to implement pre-transitional activities as stipulated in the peace deal.
We are quickly urging the parties to try to harmonize on their position and quickly convene to have a very honest consensus on the future of this country within the next 33 days. That is very, very important. We want to ensure that they look into what are the true basis prerequisite that can make them form the government, whether it is within the 33 days or within any outcome of that consensus.
Kolok warns, without that, citizens will doubt whether the parties are interested in delivering genuine peace for South Sudan. He says the parties have a responsibility to ensure that the pre-transitional activities are completed before the deadline. Those activities include transitional security arrangements, the number of states and their boundaries, as well as how to finance the new borders. Kolok says he is disappointed that both government and opposition leaders are still bickering over the numbers and boundaries of states at this late date.
Unfortunately, they want to associate the question of the states to mean a political kind of decision that must favor certain parties in regards to how many states are chosen. Unfortunately, this is going to be very challenging because then we'll continue to be bickering over this issue, which would have been sorted very quickly.
Edmund Yakani, Executive Director for Community Empowerment for Progress Organization, says citizens want to see an inclusive government formed by November 12.
The top leadership need to sit down and wish that they should have this meeting before mid-October to sort out some of these unresolved issues around the security arrangement, which mainly you can maybe term them as the VIP protection unit establishment, and also compliance with the cantoning and barracking of forces.
And Yakani says the forces instructors who graduated less than a week ago but also unified and trained more than 41,000 troops by the November deadline. He is urging the regional bloc, Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, to hold a summit on South Sudan quickly.
We are now using this opportunity today, calling upon Ismail Wise to ensure that a IGAD summit on South Sudan is held. This should be held before the 22nd of this month.
Yakani is also urging the African Union and its Security Council to urgently discuss the situation in South Sudan. Rajab Mohandis, Executive Director for the Organization for Responsive Governance, says the parties must revisit their commitments made in Addis Ababa earlier this year when they agreed to extend the transitional period.
It's also a concern that they should come under pressure in order to implement their commitments. So the success of the agreement will be defined by the level of engagement of these parties. They have signed an agreement, they are at peace with one another, and that they can meet at any time.
Mohandis warns if the parties do not meet soon, the future of the peace deal is doomed. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
The World Health Organization reports progress in containing the Ebola outbreak in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, but says many challenges to its elimination remain. WHO reports the number of cases in the outbreak now stands at 3,207, including more than 2,100 deaths. Lisa Schlein reports from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
The executive director of WHO Emergencies, Michael Ryan, says he is largely optimistic that aid workers are getting control of the Ebola outbreak in eastern Congo. But he says it is impossible to say the outbreak is over.
It's not. It isn't possible to predict where the outbreak is going to go next. But I would stand over the fact that we have significantly contained the virus in a much smaller geographic area. Now we have to kill the virus. The problem is, it's back in areas that are deeply insecure.
In fact, the virus has come full circle. Ryan notes the disease has moved from Butembo and other urban areas to the remote rural town of Mangina, the epicenter of the outbreak. He says the virus is back where it began when the Ebola outbreak was declared August 1st, 2018.
So essentially, the virus is back in the same zone. So the factors that allowed that virus to transmit in low intensity for a number of months have not changed. Deep insecurity, reticence amongst the population, distrust, and many other factors continue to make this a very dangerous situation, but a situation for which I believe we are making significant progress at this time.
Ryan says WHO is increasing the scale of its operation, engaging in active surveillance across North Kivu province and actively seeking new cases and tracing contacts to keep the virus from spreading. He says more than 230,000 people have been vaccinated against the deadly disease and more lives are being saved among people infected with the virus who are coming to the treatment centers. He says the fatality rate among the nearly 800 patients currently in Ebola treatment units is less than one-third, a significantly better outcome than the two-thirds fatality rate reported for the disease overall. Still, this is the biggest Ebola outbreak in Africa since the epidemic across three West African countries in 2014 killed more than 11,000 people. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Doctors in Bor say people should learn how to take better care of their eyes. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what's the best lesson you've ever learned from a child?
Don't mind with what other people are saying about your mistakes, laughing at you when you make error. If you don't mind about them, just the way a child doesn't mind about you laughing at him because he made a mistake.
Always tell the truth. He doesn't lie at all. Even if he's not telling the truth, if you ask him, please tell me true, he will come back and tell you the truth. Most of the time he's curious. He wanted to see what is this.
They forget quickly, then if you try to bring him or her back, then they respond positive. They don't stick like older people, how they react. We should learn to forgive.
They're always genuine with their interactions or questions, yeah. I mean, there is a child and there's an adult, and always we adults are like consumed with a lot of problems.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011. And you're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. On this World Site Day, doctors in the Jonglei state capital Bor say hundreds of South Sudanese a year are losing their sight to preventable diseases due to ignorance about eye care. One optician at Bor State Hospital says he receives on average 100 eye patients per week who could have been in danger of losing their sight. Dengai Deng has the story for VOA from Bor.
55-year-old priest Yuana Panchol of Bor says he started experiencing problems with his eyesight 4 years ago.
When I read that morning, I can see. But read to the midday, the whole book can be just covering, not to see. So it's gradually starting like that. Then I realize this thing will not continue like that. And the man has also have interest to study and continue. Like now, I'm continuing interest of the learning, interest of reading, like reading the gospel book, and as you go to the pulpit to be a preacher, so you need to see. If you don't see well, you give a raw material.
Panchol says he recently visited the eye clinic at Bor Hospital, where he was given eyeglasses and now he is able to see and read just fine. 57-year-old Daniel Mach Makwe lost his vision 10 years ago. Speaking in Dinka, Makwe says his lack of eyesight cost him many opportunities in life.
When I came to Bor Hospital, I was operated in the eye. I felt like I wouldn't see, but later I realized I could see. I can now see and walk normally. It's only things that are far that I cannot see, but I can see things that are near me. Whenever I notice any problem with my eyes, I come back to the hospital. I advise the people to be careful with their eyes, because your eyes are everything good in your life.
31-year-old Akonbol is also being treated for problems with her visions at the Bor State Hospital Eye Clinic. Speaking in Dinka, Bol says there are not enough eye care facilities in South Sudan, and it is especially dangerous for women like herself who must take care of young children to lose their eyesight.
So, in any problem, I need to die. I developed eye problem after I felt some improvement in my sight. But after I came to the hospital, we didn't know that there were drugs that can treat eye diseases to prevent one from going blind. All that we know is that a person who has eye infection can go blind, and so they are taken for eye operation. But now I'm thankful for the program that was started here in Bor Hospital to care for our eyes. I hope that if it is God's will, this program become bigger.
Dr. Abraham Tong, a cataract surgeon at Bor Hospital's eye clinic, says hundreds of South Sudanese are in danger of losing their sight to preventable eye diseases because they don't seek treatment immediately, like a young woman he met recently.
She stay at home with the condition for 2 weeks. And the family decided to go and buy the drugs. When there was a wound which has happened, and it healed. When it healed, it formed a scar. Now the vision is reduced to that lady, and it is because of the ignorance.
Dr. Tong says people often go to private clinic where they prescribe the wrong drugs for their ailment. He says he wants to help people with eye problems, but there is a critical shortage of drugs at his facility.
Yeah, preventable eye disease like conjunctivitis, it can be bacterial. So conjunctivitis can be prevented.
Dr. Tong advises people to take precautions like wearing glasses to protect their eyes in dangerous situations. He encourages South Sudanese to make their vision a priority, noting eye care at the Bor Hospital is free. Well, Sight Day is marked every October 10th. To raise awareness and focus attention on blindness and vision impairment. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
Doing business thousands of miles away from home can be challenging, but one South Sudanese woman says tough love and setting strict financial rules are the secrets to her success. Nadia Ibrahim says she didn't receive much support from her community in Canada, but her clients from all over the world have helped her succeed in the beauty products business.
Everything is always possible in life, and you have to be persistent in what you're doing. There's always up and down things in business. Business today, you're happy, tomorrow you're not happy. So you have to learn how to balance up yourself. So it's not difficult, but these days a little bit also is going to be difficult because of the capital. Right now, if you want to get into business, you have to have a good amount of money to start your business, not like those days.
When I came here, I looked around the shop. These are all beauty products. Who are your clients here? Let's talk about your clients. Who are your clients?
My clients are all over the place. Actually, when I started this store, one time I did,
So I was asking you, who are your clients?
Oh, my clients right now is all over because, like, when I get into this business, I survey around to see, like, I'm not targeting a particular group. It's open. It's open for everybody. I have white people. I have Caribbean. I have everybody. But it's a little bit difficult with our people. You know, like, when you're opening a business, don't target only one particular group.
So when you say it's a little bit difficult with our people, are you talking about South Sudanese?
South Sudanese people, they don't support.
What is the problem? These are your brothers and sisters.
They don't support. They don't support. They always, like, you have something here, it's their own person, they rather go somewhere else and buy the stuff. They don't come to you and support you. But for me, it doesn't hurt me because when I come with open mind, I open it for everybody. That's why I say when you're going to business, don't targeted one area or don't target a particular group of people that, okay, I'm going to bring this thing only for my people. You have to do it open to everybody.
What are your experience with people from your country who come to you as your customer? What is your experience? You said there's no support, but there could be a story there. Do people buy or they come and take it on credit?
No, here I don't allow no credit. It's not like back home where you have to give people credit. Here, totally, there's no credit here. You come with your cash, you pick up the stuff that you need, and you go.
And so you were telling me that dedication, persistence, and focus is the secret of your business.
Yes.
What about other issues, like sometimes you go out of business? I mean, beauty, people want to look nice all the time. Are you sometimes off season, like during winter or during summer?
Okay, during winter it's a slow month, sometimes like January, February, March. So you have to work hard during summertime at least to subsidize up for that time, for that period of time. It's very slow. I'm not going totally, there's not going to be business, but it's not going to be like when is summer season and all that also. And in summer also, we have this slow time, like around July and August is very slow because of summer. People are going vacation with their kids and all that. So people, right now it's going to pick up because kids are going back to school. So it will pick up around the end of August.
That is Nadia Ibrahim, a successful South Sudanese businesswoman in Canada, who spoke to my colleague John Tanza recently in Kitchener, Waterloo. Tomorrow, Ibrahim talks about her long-term plans for her beauty shop. In neighboring Uganda yesterday, a heavy security presence was deployed at the home of Uganda musician lawmaker Robert Kyagulanyi, popularly known as Bobby Wine. The move followed the cancellation of Wine's Independence Day concert by police that had been scheduled to take place at Wine's One Love Beach at Busabala on the outskirts of Kampala on Wednesday. Catherine Namby has this report for VOA from Kampala.
Yaman Dresden family and friends, welcome to the live rehearsal. So sing, Mumbian!
Bobby Wine spent all day yesterday rehearsing for the commemoration of 50 years of Uganda's independence.
57 years after breaking the chain of colonialism, it became our country. This became our home once more. We had hopes, we had aspirations,
our fathers and mothers jubilated. But today, we are living in a country where we have no right to even dress the way we want to dress, simply because it annoys a 75-year-old dictator.
Although previous concerts had been called off, as Wine persistently challenged the long-time rule of President Yoweri Museveni, he was sure the show would go as planned, as police hadn't communicated of any cancellation.
We wrote to police a while ago, and as the law mandates them to respond to us, police has not yet responded to us. That, in a way, communicates to us that they have no problem with our show.
Police cancelled the concert, dubbed Osobola, on grounds the organizers failed to submit plans for medical care, traffic control, crowd control and security. Wine's home turned into a mini battalion this morning, as security organs, including police and the army, pitched camp to prevent him from leaving for the concert venue more than 20 kilometers away. Police and troops also deployed at the One Love Beach, where the show was to take place. Patrick Onyango is the Kampala Metropolitan Police spokesperson.
Today there is no concert at the One Love Beach. He was insisting that it's going, and our mandate as per the constitution, we are supposed to detect and prevent crime. We are preventing a crime from being committed. Definitely it is not taking place.
Wine managed to elude the heavy deployment, but was later intercepted by police before reaching the concert venue. Wine wonders why, of all Ugandan musicians, only his shows are cancelled.
Everybody else has been enjoying their rights. Our fellow artists have been holding their shows, and some of them were attended by the president. So we expect to have the same rights as our fellow singers.
On Easter Monday, police stopped a concert by Wine on grounds that he failed to comply with the guidelines. Wine has filed a pending suit against the government for cancellation of his shows. He says more than 125 of his concerts have been cancelled since he joined politics in May 2017. Wine has said he'll run for president against Museveni. The government has banned people from wearing his signature red berets. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
And that is our show for this Thursday. We leave you with the song Surayako by Sauti Sol. We have been listening to Sauti Sol with the song Surayako. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Thanks for listening. We hope you join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.